Shri Hari Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhara Hari Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Sarvabinda Radha Kunda Guru Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Radhi Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannathpuri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Samveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaura Purnima. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Namaha Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Vigilation, Mate Bhakti Ganata Swami Yamani. Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, Nagasasa Samadhi. Pasca Chandisha Chandra. Vandayam Sri Guru Sri Vijayapada Pramayam Sri Guru Vajkavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Vadimakam Vitam Sahasajivam Sadvaitam Sagaritam Parijana Sahitam Kashajaitam Vitam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vadimakam Shri Vishakam Vitam Vitam Vanta Kapati Vishakam Vitam 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 Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 May 23rd, 2018, Ypsilanti, Michigan, at Harmony Collective. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2. Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Functions, Text 38. Yarha layesh vape satam naharer katasyu. Anybody has the verse? Pasandino dvijajana vrishala nirdeva swaha swadava shaditi smagiro na yatra Shasta Bhavishyati Kaler Bhagavan Yagante. Yarhi.
Yarhi.
When it happens.
When it happens.
Alayeshu.
Alayeshu.
In the residence of.
In the residence of.
Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Satam.
Satam.
Civilized gentlemen.
Civilized gentlemen.
Na.
Na.
No.
No.
Harehe.
Harehe.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Kataha.
Baha.
Topics.
Topics.
Siu.
Siu.
Will take place.
Will take place.
Vashandinaha.
Vashandinaha.
Atheists.
Atheists.
Vijajanaha.
Vijajanaha.
Persons declaring themselves to be the three higher classes.
Persons declaring themselves to be the three higher classes.
Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas.
Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas.
Vishalaha.
Vishalaha.
The lower class Shudras.
The lower class Shudras.
Nirdevaha.
Nirdevaha.
Ministers of the government.
Ministers of the government.
Swaha.
Swaha.
Hymns to perform sacrifices.
Hymns to perform sacrifices.
Swadha.
Swadha.
The ingredients to perform sacrifices.
The ingredients to perform sacrifices.
Vashat.
Vashat.
The altar of sacrifice.
The altar of sacrifice.
Iti.
Iti.
All these.
All these.
Sma.
Sma.
Shall.
Shall.
Giraha.
Giraha.
Words.
Words.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Yetra.
Yetra.
Anywhere.
Anywhere.
Shasta.
Shasta.
The chastiser.
The chastiser.
Bhavishyati.
Bhavishyati.
Will appear.
Will appear.
Kalahe.
Kalahe.
Of the Kali age.
Of the Kali age.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
The personality of Godhead.
Yuga Ante.
Yuga Ante.
At the end of.
At the end of.
So, let's just look at the Sanskrit for a minute. Satam na harikatasyu. So, Satam. What does Sat mean? Yeah, so what does Sat mean?
Eternal.
Eternal. And it also means what? Truth. So satam generally means what? People who are truthful. It's generally a word used for saintly persons, for devotees, satam prasanga mamavirya sambhido, to associate with the sat, with the devotees. So satam na harikata. So harikata is what? Topics about Krishna. So satam na harikata. The truthful people don't have any harikata. They don't talk about Hari. And then we have Pasandino Dvijajana. So Dvijajana is the twice born. Dvi means two. And Jana means birth. So the twice-born people, Jenna means people, also. And Pasundino means an atheist or an offender. So the twice-born people are all offenders. And then we have Nirdevaha, that's an interesting word. So Nir means what? We think of Nrsingadev.
Man.
And Deva means?
God.
Gods. So Nirdeva, the god people. It's a term used to describe what? What people? The god people.
Demigods or god conscious?
Could be. But it means government.
Oh.
So the people in government, the Kshatriyas, are called Nirdeva, the god people, the chief people in government. So Vrishala, they become low class. And then we have the Swaha. So Swaha is what? We make an offering, right?
Yeah.
And Swada is the activities, the ingredients that you offer. And then we have this Sma Gira no Yatra. So Gira means what? We have this in the Shikshastika. Means words. So Gira na, they don't even know the words. They can't even describe. The translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, at the end of Kali Yuga, when there exists no topics on the subject of God, even at the residences of so-called saints and respectable gentlemen of the three higher castes, and when the power of government is transferred to the hands of ministers elected from the low-born Shudra class or those less than them, and when nothing is known of the techniques of sacrifice, even by word, at that time the Lord will appear as a supreme chastiser. So anybody remember what the symptoms were?
There will be no chanting of, there will be no information left of God, even at the houses of saints.
Yes, okay, so there's no talk of God at the houses of saints. What else?
The government is run by Shudras, elected Shudras.
The government's run by elected low-class persons.
That's happening now, right?
I think so, yeah. Not sure about that, but I think so. Looks like. What else? What are the other symptoms?
The age decreases? Age of.
No. Certainly. But what's mentioned specifically in this verse?
That no one knows about how to properly perform sacrifice.
Yes, they don't even know the word. They don't even talk about it. There's not even any discussion of how to perform sacrifice. And one more.
The Lord will appear?
Yes, but what are the conditions for the Lord to appear? That's what I'm asking. There's four conditions given.
I mean, there's no harikata.
There's no harikata, even from the saintly person, yes.
We said that, right?
Yes.
Sorry.
That's okay. Repeating is good. There's one more.
You mean...
It's the... Pashandino Dvijatana.
Atheist in the form of Brahmanas?
Atheist in the form of higher class persons, Brahmanas, Sakyas, and Vaishyas. So those four things. And then the Lord comes as whom?
Kalki.
Purport. The symptoms of the worst conditions of the material world at the last stage of this age, called Kali Yuga, are stated herein. The sum and substance of such conditions is godlessness. Even the so-called saints and higher castes of the social orders, generally known as the Dvijajanas or the twice-born, will become atheists. As such, all of them will practically forget even the holy name of the Lord and what to speak of his activities. The higher castes of society, namely the intelligent class of men, guiding the destinies of the social orders, the administrative class of men, guiding the law and order of the society, and the productive class of men, guiding the economic development of the society, must all be properly well-versed in knowledge of the Supreme Lord, knowing factually his name, quality, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, and personality. So it's significant here that Prabhupada is giving some English terms for the three upper varnas. So he gave, anybody remember, without looking, what Prabhupada gave as the three English terms? Without looking, anybody can remember? gave intelligent, administrative, and productive. So, my friend Rukmini, you may know her, Dr. Ruchira Dutta, she'll be here for the wedding. So she and I are writing a book on Varna Dharma without using the word Varna anywhere in the book. And we also don't use the words Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. So we're picking words like this, like for the Brahmanas, we say the field of ideas. For the Kshatriyas, the field of government. For the Vaishyas, the field of resources. And for Shudras, the field of artistry. So we see that the Srila Prabhupada also does things like this. He uses some other terms, some English terms that people wouldn't know. The saints in the higher castes or orders of the society are judged by their proportion of knowledge in the science of God and practical knowledge of devotional service. So theoretical knowledge and practical knowledge. Oh no, I skipped something, I'm sorry. Are judged by the proportion of knowledge in the science of God or tattva gnan and not by any kind of birthright or bodily designations. Such designations without any knowledge of the science of God and practical knowledge of devotional service. Something he's talking about knowing the theory and the practice are considered to be all decorations of dead bodies. It's a very common phrase that Prabhupada uses. It's from a verse. And when there is too much inflation of these decorated dead bodies in society, I get this picture of dead bodies like kind of blowing up. But I assume the Prabhupada means a lot of these people, not that they're like big and fat dead bodies. There develop so many anomalies in the progressive peaceful life of the human being. Because of the lack of training or culture in the upper section of the social orders, they are no more to be designated as the Dvijajanas or the Twice-Born. The significance of being Twice-Born has been explained in many places in these great literatures, and again one is reminded herewith that birth executed by the sex life of the father and the mother is called animal birth. So why does Prabhupada always make this emphasis that it's not by birth, it's not by birth, it's not by birth? Why is he just like pounding this all the time?
It's a qualification.
Yes, but why? Why is Prabhupada pounding that it's qualification, not birth, just like that?
A lot of people think that way.
Yes, a lot of people think that way. Do Westerners generally think that way?
No. It's because of his specific background.
Yes, so this is really preaching to who?
To the Indians.
To the Indians and to non-Indians who will read these things and say, oh,
it's a caste system.
It's the Indian caste system. So he's pounding this all over the place. Because so the Indians know, hey, we're not talking about birth. And so the non-Indians know, oh, Prabhupada's not talking about some Indian caste system. But such animal birth and progress of life on the animal principles of eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. Always interesting when Prabhupada, instead of using defending, uses
fearing.
Without any scientific culture of spiritual life, so it's not that there's anything wrong with eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating, but you also have to have scientific culture. It's not that we don't eat, or sleep, or have kids. Such animal birth and progress of life on the animal principles of eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating without any scientific culture of spiritual life is called the Shudra life, or to be more explicit, the uncultured life of the lower class of men. It is stated herein that the governmental power of society in the Kali Yuga will be passed over to the uncultured, godless laborer classes of men, and thus the Nirdevas, or the ministers of the government, will be Vrishalas, or the uncultured, lower class men of society. Mm-hmm. No one can expect any peace and prosperity in a human society full of uncultured, lower class of men. The symptoms of such uncultured social animals are already in vogue, which is pretty heavy because this is when we're talking about the end of Kali Yuga, 427,000 years from now. So, like, how much worse is it going to get? And it is the duty of the leaders of men to take note of it and try to reform the social order by introducing the principles of twice-born men trained in the science of God consciousness. So that's what we're trying to do, yeah? This can be done by expanding the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. In the degraded condition of human society, the Lord incarnates as the Kalki avatar and kills all the demoniac without mercy. Yarha layeshu api yarha layeshu api satam naharer katasyu pasandino dvijajana vrishala nirdevaha swaha swadhyavasariti smagiro nayatra Sastha Bhavishyati Kaler Bhagavan Yugante. Thereafter, at the end of Kali Yuga, when there exists no topics on the subject of God, even at the residences of so-called saints and respectable gentlemen of the three higher castes, and when the power of government is transferred to the hands of ministers elected from the low-born Shudra class or those less than them, and when nothing is known of the techniques of sacrifice, even by word, at that time the Lord will appear as the supreme chastiser. So we like to advertise the Lord as being merciful. In fact, in the purport of Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Prabhupada said, the Lord is all good. The Lord is all merciful. Mm-hmm. So we regularly advertise that God is only merciful. He is not vindictive. And I believe it's in the first canto where Prabhupada writes in the purport that Krishna is very sorry when he has to punish people. He doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is true for us also. You know, we really do not like, if we're normal people, I'm sure there's some people, whatever, but normal people, we don't like to have to correct others, we don't like to have to punish others, we really hesitate to do so. You know, parents will try so many means before they have to deal out punishment for their children. Again, you know, but ordinary people, generally, they're like that. It's with great regret when you have to deal with somebody in a harsh manner or in a punishing manner where you can no longer be kind to them. I used to take my high school students regularly to the courthouse as part of our civics instruction. And I remember this one judge who was judging some young man who'd had drug offenses, I think with cocaine. And he said, you know, you keep breaking your... Probation. Mm-hmm. You keep breaking your probation, you know, you keep leaving the rehabilitation centers. He said, this is your last chance. He said, I want to give you one more chance. And I was sitting there thinking, why are you giving him another chance? He's already had so many chances. He said, I want to give you one more chance, but this is it. He said, if you don't stay in the rehab, if you break your probation, you're going to jail for 15 years. He said, that's it. This is your last chance. But he still wanted to give him mercy. I remember another case I saw, the woman had been really speeding. And the judge said to her, you know, I could revoke your license at this point. This was also like second or third offense. And he said, you know, you're going to have to pay a fine. And then he said, and get the lead out of your right foot. You know? But he said, you know, I'm not going to give you the full punishment, but if it happens again, then I will. So this is the general tendency, and it's the tendency of the Lord also. You know, the tendency of the Lord also is that he's forgiving and that he's merciful, but at a certain point, it's like, okay, there's no more fooling around. We're done. You know, we're just done. And this is the end of Kali Yuga that we're talking about here. Yuga Ante, the end of Kali Yuga. And so what has to be done at the end of Kali Yuga is to prepare for what?
Satyayuga.
Satyayuga. It has to be a preparation for the Satyayuga. So it's a cleaning process. So some of you know, I just recently published a devotional novel, and one of the things that I did was I was studying other works of fiction, and one was written by a devotee, which was a story of these two people who just were kind of somewhat interested in Krishna consciousness and got zapped to the end of Kali Yuga. So one of them, like, they time traveled. One of them time traveled to the end of Satyayuga. One of them time traveled to the end of Kali Yuga. And he was writing about what was going on in Kali Yuga. He was describing a whole what they call dystopia. You've heard of that? Dystopia. Dystopia is, you know, utopia is like a wonderful society. Dystopia is a terrible society. So I think there are many books and films just, you know, describing a dystopia. 1984, Animal Farm, which I studied in high school, are very famous books describing dystopia. So that's what's being described here, a dystopia. Everything's fallen apart. And at this point, the only thing to do is just destroy the thing. You know, like you have a car. So we had that recently. I was driving my son's car, and somebody smashed into the car, and the insurance company says it's a total loss. The cost of repairing the car is more than the car is worth. At that point, they just pay you for the car. It's a total loss. So at the end of Kali Yuga, it's a total loss. Kalki just comes and just finishes. And then there's these personalities who are hiding out in the Himalayas, who are in a deep trance. And that's why in this devotee's fictional book, one guy went to the end of Satyayuga and one guy went to the end of Kali Yuga. So the one who went to the end of Satyayuga, the yogis were saying, okay, now we have to go into a trance and stay in a subtle form to wait for the end of Kali Yuga. At the end of Kali Yuga, we'll manifest again, and then we'll take over the society. And there's actually a battle that goes on at the end of Kali Yuga with Kalki to destroy all of these people. So here we have four categories that no longer deserve mercy, that they only deserve destruction. So what was the first category, anybody remember?
No Harikatha.
No Harikatha among people who would be categorized as?
Brahmas.
What was the word?
Saintly people.
Anyone remember the Sanskrit?
Satam.
Satam. So again, Satam means those who are?
Truthful.
Truthful. And who are should be concerned with the?
The eternal.
Eternal. Actually, the only thing that's true with a capital T is that which is eternal. As Krishna says, you know, the eternal, there's no cessation, and of the temporary, there's no endurance. So the people who are concerned with capital T truth are the people who are concerned with what is eternal, what is always true. You know, there are many things that are temporarily true, but what is always true? So what is always true is Harikatha. That's what's always true. Other things are very temporarily true. It's temporarily true. There was just recently some royal wedding. That's a temporary truth. That's not an eternal truth. You know, what's happening, you know, Palestine-Israeli conflict or something. You know, those are all temporary truths that people become absorbed in. So truthful persons should not become absorbed in such things. They should become absorbed in Harikatha, the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. I mean, obviously, one has to deal somewhat with the world. It's not that we should still think that, you know, George W. Bush is president or something. We should have some knowledge of it. Obviously, we shouldn't be known as fools. But our main absorption should be in Harikatha, in our own mind, in our own speech. Otherwise, we're not really truthful persons. We're not really absorbed in truth. We're absorbed in something else. And whenever our minds go to something else, as Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur nicely explains in Madhavya Kadambani, that until the stage of a Shakti, our mind will tend to flow towards untruth. That even in the stage of Nishtha, being fixed, and even in the stage of Ruchi, having a great taste for the activities of devotional service, our mind will still tend to flow towards untruth. Kind of like a car that the steering is off. Ever been like a car or a bicycle?
Yeah.
That, you're constantly having to adjust it. Yeah. So our minds have this, you know, we're chanting our japa, we're chanting the kirtan, we're hearing the bhagavatam, and our mind is going, right? And Krishna says you have to always bring the mind back, bring the mind back. It's interesting that even at those higher stages, Nista one is considered liberated from the modes of material nature. And Prabhupada says at Nista, it's no longer a hard struggle with determination. Everything is happening automatically. So before the stage of Nista, one is making a hard struggle with determination to bring back the mind. You know, it's kind of some screaming toddler, you know, who went, I don't want that, you know, and you're like, get in the car. Right? We were out with the family in Seattle, so we went to the botanical gardens, and then the little one, the two-year-old, she says, I don't want to go home! I want to go to a store! And we said, okay, we're going to a store. And she was all right. Then when we were getting in the car again, she says, I want to go to another store! We said, sorry, now we're going home. You know? We had to pick her up and put her in the van. She would not get in the van of her own accord. So our mind is often like that. Think of Krishna. Chant your japa. I don't want to. I want to think about this. You know? We have to like pick up our mind and put it in the car and belt it into the child seat. We are going. So until Nishta is like that, and Nishta and Ruchi, there's still some effort, but it's very slight. There's still some effort, but it's not a hard struggle. It's very slight. It's like, hey, Krishna, okay. Hey, come on, Krishna, okay. Like a well-trained animal. So that was described in the story of Rishabhdev.
Sit.
Yeah, exactly. So Rishabhdev, the question was asked, why did Rishabhdev, pretty sure it was Rishabhdev, not exhibit his yogic powers? And the answer was that a yogi doesn't trust the mind. Just like if you capture a wild animal, you don't trust it. It's always going to be a wild animal. And sometimes people trust wild animals to their regret. Try to make a pet out of a wild animal. But if you have a well-trained animal, if you have an animal that's really like we, when I was growing up, we had a dog, and we sent him to obedience school, so he was trained to sit and to heal and to, like that. But he wasn't fully trained. He wasn't fully trained. So. When I took him for a walk when I was 9 years old, he ran ahead of me, and then all of a sudden stopped, and I tripped over him and broke my arm. He was lying on the street with a broken arm until somebody found me 2 hours later. And I kept saying to him, sit, sit, sit. And he wouldn't sit. I couldn't get up because he was pulling my one good arm. And he wouldn't sit. He wasn't very well trained. But at Nishta and Ruchi, the mind is well trained. So if the mind starts wandering away, sit. And the mind sits. It gets up and walks away again. And then sit. And it sits. You don't have to. It's not a big struggle anymore. But it still wanders away. So in Nishta, 50% or 75% of the anartas are gone. And at Ruchi, one gets great taste from one's service. In the beginning stage of Ruchi, one gets great taste from one's service when all the elements are nice, like you really enjoy kirtan, when music is beautiful. And at the higher stage of Ruchi, you get great taste from your service, even if the elements are not very nice. But then at Ashakti, there's this switch, where instead of becoming attached to the service, one becomes attached to Krishna. At that stage, one doesn't really care so much what one does. So at Ruchi, one is like, I really have this service that I love. And at Ashakti, it's just, I love Krishna. I'm attached to Krishna. Whatever I do for Krishna is okay. And at that stage, the default value of the mind is to go to Krishna. So at that stage, even if there is some mundane topic, one automatically just finds oneself thinking of Krishna and talking about Krishna. It was a very nice conversation Prabhupada had with some devotees in Bengal. Prabhupada said, the Bengali women are so beautiful with their black hair and their dark eyes. And one devotee said, Krishna has dark hair and dark eyes. And Prabhupada said, why are you talking of Krishna? We were talking about mundane things. He said, it is so nice, even we are talking about mundane things, that you are remembering Krishna. So that these are the qualities of the satam. Satam people, the truthful people, in the beginning stages, they're making a strong endeavor with determination to speak Hari Katha. In the intermediate stages, they're making some effort. And in the higher stages, they naturally talk of Hari Katha. So when those who are the truthful people don't talk about Hari Katha at all, do we see this in the modern world?
Yeah.
Yes, we see the priests, the ministers, the rabbis, the imams. Are they speaking Hari Katha? Often not. Sometimes, but often not. Often not. Often they're talking just about values. In the UK, they don't have a separation of church and state. And it's technically a country affiliated with the Anglican Church. And in all the government schools, what we would call public schools, they have a required time in the morning for what they call collective worship, which is supposed to be exactly what it sounds like. Like Sankirtan is what it's supposed to be. But generally, they just talk about values. Okay, it's time for our collective worship. Let's talk about honesty. There's no prayer, and there's certainly no Hari Katha. So this is what's happening. And it's the substitution. We talked yesterday about sub-religious principles. The substitution of sub-religious principles for religious principles. This is very much happening. And then, of course, we have so-called saintly persons who don't even talk about that. They just talk about how you can use religion to become rich and famous and powerful in the world. So when the people who are supposed to be absorbed in truth have no harikata. And now at least there's a little, you know, if you go to any church or mosque or synagogue or, you know, temple, there'll be some harikata on some level. But when there's nothing, when the priestly class, when the so-called truthful devotees never talk about harikata. All right, next one. Anybody remember what the next one is for chastisement and destruction? Okay, we'll go to that. So the government, when the people in government are not of the quality of government. Mm-hmm. So first, the Satam is talking about not just the Brahmanas, but the Vaishnavas in general. I mean, particularly the Brahmanas, but anyone, they wouldn't have to be working as a Brahmana to be a Satam. You understand? Mm-hmm. You know, you could be repairing cars and be a saintly person. So generally we think of this as the priestly class, the Satam, but it could be anybody who's a saintly person. And now we're going a step down to the government. So the government is very important. Why?
Keep the peace of the mind.
Yeah, peace of mind. They provide a peaceful platform for devotional service. Mm-hmm. Basically, the government makes sure you have food, water, clean air, you know, proper occupation, education, protection from enemies, making sure you take, just like we have this building here, and we're having harikata in this building. And, you know, if we said, okay, everyone just sit in the middle of the street for harikata, it's a little difficult. So it's like that. The government is supposed to make sure you have shelter and care and protection, that there's not criminals, there's not enemies from other countries, that, again, you have your basic necessities of life are provided, that there's not cheating going on. So, and they're supposed to help Brahminical culture. They're supposed to facilitate that. They're supposed to use some of the tax money for sacrifices. So there's a certain mentality of people who are kshatriyas. People who are kshatriyas are very attached to which of the four dharma, artha, kama, moksha.
Artha.
No.
Dharma.
The Vaishyas are attached to artha. So they're very attached to dharma. They're very attached to righteousness. And they have this mood of being a protector. That's why they're called Nirdeva. They're like God. They're taking care of us like God takes care of us. Just like God provides sunlight and water. And so the government is supposed to act as the representatives of God to take care of the people. Mm. Sometimes they're called Mirpati, the husbands of everybody. Mm. They're sometimes called the fathers of everybody. So they're like the gods, the fathers, the husbands, that they care for everybody. They make sure that all of our material needs are taken care of and that our spiritual needs are taken care of. Mm. So people who do that have to have this mood of dharma, of righteousness, of honor. Because it's hard to take care of people. Mm. It's not easy to take care of people. It's not. Right? Mm. So they're very self-sacrificing kind of people. You know, they're willing to die on the battlefield. They're willing to give up their own comforts for the sake of the citizens. That's their mood. Just like the parents naturally sacrifice for their children. And the husband works for the sake of the family. And God is giving everything for the citizens. Now, the lower classes of people don't have this mood. The Vaishyas and really want to call them lower classes, but anyway, the Vaishyas and the Shudras, they don't have this self-sacrificing mood so much. So the people in the field of resources or the productive class, they are trying to provide all the food for society, but they're also very concerned with making sure they're making a profit. And you don't want the people in the field of resources not to care about their own profit. If the people in the field of resources don't care about their own profit, they won't be able to do their job properly. So if they're just self-sacrificing, it won't work. And we see when people in the field of resources get in the field of government, they corrupt the field of government. Yes? Mm-hmm. When business gets involved, they corrupt government. They start using government for their own profit. Kshatriyas are not interested in their own. The profit the kshatriyas want is honor. That's the profit they're looking for. And the profit the Vaishyas are looking for is literal profit, money and resources. And And so instead of distributing the tax money for the good of the citizens, the Vaishyas will line their own pockets. That's what they're supposed to do as Vaishyas. When they're situated as Vaishyas, that's a good thing, because their desire to get their own profit makes abundance in society. They also have a charitable mood, because Vaishyas also have some influence of the mode of passion. But you don't want them in a position of government. In fact, we don't want Brahmanas in a position of government either, because the Brahmanas are far too merciful. Oh, somebody did a bad thing? Oh, it's okay. Just tell them to chant Hare Krishna and go on their way. You know, and it's like, it doesn't work well when Brahmanas are supposed to administer justice. And then what about people in the field of artistry? When you get people in the artistry field, in the field of government, you really have a problem. In both, the people who are meant for the field of government or the field of resources are called, by the Bhagavatam, always thirsty. They're never satisfied. They always want to expand, which has to be done in those areas. If you're trying to have production for the society or safety for the society, you always want it bigger, better, more. That's very much the Rajaguna. And that's necessary in those occupations. But the Brahmanas and the Shudras are always self-satisfied. The Brahmanas are self-satisfied because within they're absorbed in truth. And so they don't care much about getting more, better, bigger, better. They just don't care. They just, you know, because they're satisfied within. And the Shudras don't care because they're in the mode of ignorance. So it looks similar. The Brahmanas and the Shudras sort of don't care. But the Shudras don't care because they're lazy. The Brahmanas aren't lazy, they're self-satisfied. But the Shudras are just lazy. Which is good if you're a Shudra. It's a disturbance in the social order if Shudras are greedy. So Shudras are satisfied, you know, I made a beautiful chair. I gave a beautiful performance. I served the food wonderfully. The Shudras don't even want to enjoy their own work. By the way, each of the Varnas has some nice quality that relates to bhakti. And the nice quality of the Shudras that relates to bhakti is their service mood. They don't even want to enjoy their own work. They paint pictures that hang in other people's homes. You follow? They cook beautiful food and serve beautiful food that other people will enjoy. They pick up other people's trash. Their satisfaction comes that they've brought happiness to others. And the Shudra is satisfied with their craft. If they do their craft nicely, if they do their artistry nicely and it brings pleasure to others, they're satisfied with that and whatever they can get easily. Which, of course, translates in modern society to like eating fast food. You know, but this concept of whatever I can just get easily. So you put somebody from the field of artistry in the field of government, they're not going to really endeavor to take care of the citizens. It's not their thing. They'll do whatever comes easily. They'll take the shortest, fastest route. Whereas the people who are designed for government and designed for the field of resources, they'll endeavor to make it bigger and better and bigger and better. Someone in the field of artistry just won't do that. And people in the field of artistry, they're not so concerned whether the means of getting things are pious or impious. They just want it fast. Fast and easy. Pious? Okay, I'll do it pious if it works. If it's not pious, it won't. But in the field of government, their whole thing is dharma. That's their whole thing. It's got to be dharma. For those in artistry, it's like, if I can do it dharmically, fine. But if I can't, I'll do it adharmically. Yeah, whatever. And so that just doesn't work. They'll cut corners and so forth. It's incompatible. And then we have the people outside of the four varnas. So some people outside of the four varnas are... they're not low-class people. They're just sort of avadutas of some sort. Out of the four varnas. But you also have people out of the four varnas who are out and out criminals. They don't have any kind of proper occupation. So what to speak of when you get criminals in the government? You know, just imagine. Now they have great facility to rob and steal and harass the whole society. So when the people in the field of government belong in the field of artistry or are criminals, and then also, there's no mercy. There's no mercy. They're not qualified to lead. They're just going to cause a disturbance. All right, next one.
Pashandis in the form of Brahmanas?
Or any of the twice born. Yes, so atheists in the three higher classes. So why, especially in those classes? Now, you want to have theistic people in all four of the classes. So atheistic intellectuals, what do?
Promote wrong things.
They promote wrong things. Is that happening today?
Yes.
You have these big scientists and philosophers who write these books that there's no God. Hmm. And they get up and preach that there's no God. Hmm. You know, what did this, some guy, The God Delusion, was this big famous book by one of these big scientists. So they use their PhDs, they use their position in the universities, they use their scientific discoveries to promote that there's no God, you can just do whatever you like. And what a great disturbance that causes in society. So they twist truth for their own purposes. And what happens when people in government are atheistic?
They don't support the proper values.
Yes. They're still fighting for Dharma, but their idea of Dharma is all warped. Dharma intersakshat bhagavat panita. Dharma has to come from God. Dharma means what pleases God. You can't just make it up. It's just like, I can't just make up what the law is. Prabhupada would always say, you know, if you're in a country where you drive on the right, you have to drive on the right. If you're in a country where you drive on the left, you have to drive on the left. You can't say, well, I come from a country where you drive on the left, I'm going to go to a right driving country and drive on the left. I mean, you could do that, but you won't last very long, and neither will your car. So, you know, you can't make up your dharma. You have to follow the laws of the country, and you can't make up dharma for the country. It has to come from God. And it's a very simple concept. I give this example all the time. You know, there's a door and a wall. If you try to walk through the wall, you'll get hurt. If you walk through the door, you'll be happy. You know, the rules of how to be happy in a house have to do with the designer of the house. You know, Malati was talking to me a couple days ago about Detroit, and she said, well, you know, whoever runs the Detroit temple has to know where the light switches are and the fuse boxes are. Right? I mean, if you try to take care of a building and you don't know the design of the building, you don't know where the fuse boxes are, you don't know where the lights are, then you're going to mess it up. So it's really simple. The building of the universe is designed by God, and He knows how to use it. And He can tell you the rules for using it. If you don't do it that way, everybody's going to be walking through walls. And so people now are just making up dharma. They're just completely making up dharma. I mean, I think one of the most gross and obvious areas is that of marriage. So, you know, what is the dharma now? What do people think now makes sex dharmic?
Consent.
Consent only. If there's consent, it's righteous. And this is actually predicted in the Bhagavatam, that sexual liaisons will be merely on the basis of consent. So whereas, according to the Shastra, what makes sex dharmic?
Marriage.
And marriage means what?
Children, procreation.
And also, they don't think about that they have to have the consent of somebody other than the parties, the human parties involved. It's just like this building. We can't make changes to this building without approval from the government because it's a historic building. So I believe we own this building.
Yeah.
But the fact that we own this building doesn't mean that just we can all consent. Okay, we own the building, so as the owners of the building, we're all going to decide what we're going to do. Like the room I'm staying in, you can't open the windows. So I'm sure we would all consent to putting in openable windows. I have no doubt that we would all consent to that. But the government doesn't consent. Therefore, we cannot do it. So how we use this body also has something to do with the consent of the owner of the body. And if we don't think that someone else owns the body, then how come we can't stay in it as long as we like? You know, how come we can be kicked out of this body without notice even? The government has to give you notice. You know, there's an eminent domain. There's the law. It's the Constitution in America. The government can't just come and kick you out of your house. Mm-hmm. They have to pay you for it. Mm-hmm. A landlord can't just throw you out. They have to give you notice. Mm-hmm. Right? But God doesn't even have to give you notice. He can just say, get out right now. That's it. Gone. So obviously we're not the owner. So this is a very simple example of how modern governments that are atheistic, they invent dharma. You know, and if you do things that are not dharma, you're going to walk into walls. So again, it's not tolerable. It's not tolerable. Just like if we use this building in a way that was opposed to the laws of America, although we own the building, it would not be tolerated. Right? If we started running a crack house here or a brothel, or, you know, it wouldn't be tolerated. And we couldn't say, well, I own the building. No, jail. So these near devas who are supposed to represent God, when they concoct their own dharma because they say there's no God, then it's not tolerated. Okay, and what was the last one?
Knowledge of sacrifice.
There's no knowledge of sacrifice. So this word sacrifice is very interesting. This is something that Rukmini and I have been really looking at in our book on Varna Dharma. Is we tend to take the word sacrifice in the English meaning of giving up something desirable. But that seems to be a different Sanskrit term. That seems to be terms like... why is it like out of my brain? What's the word that means difficulty? Tapa, tapasya. It seems to be a word like tapasya, which also means burning, by the way. So doing some voluntary austerity or penance, prayaschitta. So tapasya is taking some voluntary austerity, and penance is a voluntary austerity to rectify a wrong, like apologizing when you don't want to. That's a penance. It's not exact. It's a form of austerity. So although we use the word sacrifice, we don't mean those things at all. Mm. When the Shastra talks about yajna, it means religious ceremonies. Mm. That's what it means. What we would sort of pejoratively call rituals, religious rituals. So some sort of religious ceremonies. Now, in these religious ceremonies, you are definitely sacrificing. You're sacrificing your time, you're sacrificing your intelligence, you're sacrificing perhaps your money. I mean, there's so many things you're sacrificing in the course of doing a religious ceremony. But the idea is that these are religious ceremonies. So this has to do with, you know, our deity worship is a kind of yajna. Our congregational singing, if you ever wonder why congregational singing is called a yajna, it's a religious practice. So a yajna is a formalized religious practice as given in the Shastra to connect us with God. Mm. That's supposed to be done at certain intervals, at certain times particularly. Mm. You know, some regular religious observance. So here what happens is the population doesn't even know about them. They don't even know about them by word. So, like today, how many people perform regular religious observances? It's a small percent. You know, in this country, the vast majority of people say they believe in God. But of those people who say they believe in God, how many of them regularly do some sort of religious practice, what we call sadhana? Very, very few. And if they do, it's rare. You know, they'll go to church on Easter and Christmas or something like that. It's not frequent. And the number of people regularly attending some place of worship is going down in this country. Although, statistically, we're the most religious democracy in the world. The number of people who say that they believe in God are the highest percentage of any democracy in the world. Also the highest percentage of people who give in charity.
More than India?
Yes. But as far as actual practice, that's going down. Now, some people may have practice outside of a place of worship. They may be regularly reading the Bible or praying in their home, which is also a kind of yajna. But it's going down. People have this idea, yes, I'm very spiritual. How are you spiritual? What do you do that's spiritual? Oh, I'm just spiritual.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I use stones. Yeah, rocks.
I get rocks.
I have some rocks and I have some crystals on my shelf. Well, I have some rocks on my shelf. But, you know, that's... the word Shila means stone. So, but that's, you know, that's the idea. I put some crystals like this, that rock shop, really cool shop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have some little angel figurine on my dashboard or something, and that way I'm spiritual. And we find in the modern society, this is happening all over the world, that the religious ceremonies are being stripped of
religion.
So in America, practically everything is closed on one day a year. Do you know what day that is?
Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Places that are not closed even on New Year's or 4th of July, they're closed on Christmas. Christmas is, practically everything is closed in this country. What is the main way Christmas is observed?
Buying gifts.
Materialism.
Anything to do with Christ?
No.
No. You put up an evergreen tree, you give other people presents, you tell your children there's a Santa Claus. NASA tracks the travels of Santa Claus. You can go to the NASA website and I'll tell you. There's several post offices in many countries of the world that are dedicated to getting letters to Santa Claus and sending replies, and that's Christmas. They've taken NASA. Christmas and they've sucked the Christ out of it. Or Easter. What do people do for Easter?
Eggs.
Or plastic eggs. You take your children out looking for plastic eggs in the grass full of
laid
candy.
By a rabbit.
And rabbit, big rabbits. People dressed up as rabbits. And, you know, and the same thing is happening, you know.
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. I mean, not that we want to jump on the Christians. It's happening with the Hindu festivals also. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very interesting. My daughter-in-law liked to run marathons. And one time when I was visiting, they were in a color run. So what do you think the color run is an imitation of?
Holy.
And it was interesting, the path was around an oval grassy area. They were circumambulating this empty area. They ran around the track, I don't know how many times, it was like 10 times they were running around the track. And then at different points they were all throwing colors. And then when they finally finished running around, they had a band with music and dancing. So they were having music and dancing while everybody was throwing colors on each other. And I thought, they just took Krishna out of it. Mm-hmm. They said, what a nice festival that the Hindus do for Krishna. Hmm. Let's do the festival without Krishna. Instead of circumambulating a deity, they circumambulated a plot of grass. And instead of having a kirtan, they were just singing, you know, some ordinary song. So this is happening. And this is becoming very popular, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very popular. This non-spiritual holy festival.
It's very
popular. It's becoming a big thing.
It's a commercialized thing, though.
Very, yes. Mm-hmm. So this is what's being talked about in this verse of the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. You know, people are still doing observances. And then they have their secular observances, like 4th of July, or, you know, Thanksgiving also. It's supposed to be a harvest festival where you thank God, and they're just killing a bunch of birds. And, I mean, just... So they're sucking all the spiritual out of... They still have observances, you know, and then, of course, the samskaras, the weddings, and the birthdays, and the anniversaries, you know. And sometimes the weddings are still in the church. But, you know, may you two just love each other forever, and that's all they talk about. So this is then just finished. It's just destroyed. You're taking the process of sacrifice. You're taking what is the process of yajna meant to do? What are we supposed to do at all these festivals and all these observances, whether they're daily or weekly or monthly or yearly? What are we supposed to be doing?
Praying.
Purification. Well, prayer is a religious ritual. What's the purpose of that?
To connect this.
To connect to the Supreme. The purpose is yoga. The purpose is to have at least sometimes, okay, if you can't connect with the Supreme 24/7, like it's explained nicely, Rupa Goswami says, always remember Krishna, never forget him. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in commenting on this, says for the beginner, that means at least regularly. At least you have a time. This time of the day, this time of the week, this time of the month, this time of the year, at least this time you're going to connect with the Supreme. You're going to remember the Supreme. Mm-hmm. And just think about this. People are taking the external formalities of connecting with the Supreme and using it for their own sense gratification. Mm-hmm. They're taking the things set in place to make the connection, and then they're using that for their own sense gratification. So how intolerable is that? You know, I think what I could compare it to. It's like, you know, if you someone that you love, ostensibly love, it's in your family or something, and you have the time of day that you're with them, and then you spend all that time on your phone. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like let's say you eat breakfast with the family every day and you sit down to eat breakfast. That's the time to connect with your family. It's a designated time, a dinner time or a breakfast time. And then everybody just gets out their phone and does something else. So it's like, okay, Lord, here's my time to connect with you. Here's my time to be with you. Oh, keep the shell. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is what happens when we do what kind of chanting, by the way?
Inattentive
chanting. It's exactly the same. Mm. We keep the shell, we keep the form, and we suck out the essence of it. We suck out the meaning of it. We suck out the connection. You know, here I am, Lord, but I'm not here. Right? So when no one even talks about the connection, when there's no one in the world even saying, where's the Christ in Christmas, which people say nowadays, right? People talk about it. They bemoan. We're not the only ones talking about this. There's a lot of people saying, you know, hey, these are meant for connection. When no one even says that anymore. When there's not even a word. When all the observances have become fully secularized. Secularized means you don't see any connection with God. And they're all empty. And no one even remembers the word of what they're for. No one even remembers the purpose. Then again, destruction. So we can look at these, of course, and say, well, am I a burden on the earth? Am I going to be cut down? Is Krishna going to get fed up with me? And say, oop, time to weed the garden. You know? If I'm claiming to be Satam, if I'm claiming to be a saintly person, how much am I absorbed in Harikatam? If I care for other people, whether I'm a big government or a little government, am I actually caring for them according to the Dharma of God, or do I make up my own rules? Do I really put Krishna at the center of my life, or is he just on the side? You know, am I a functional atheist? Many people are functional atheists, professed theist functional atheists. And do I actually connect with Krishna in my sacrifices? Are they real times of connection, or are they just, you know, Krishna-less holy festivals? Christless Christmas festivals. So, am I a burden on the earth? Am I a burden on the Hare Krishna movement? Am I really in the mood of service? Am I here as a representative of God? Am I part of the good population? So, and if we're not, like Jesus said, if the salt of the earth isn't salty. You know, he said, you, my disciples, you're the salt of the earth. But if you've lost your salt. So we're meant, Prabhupada is explaining very nicely over and over again with this Hare Krishna movement, we're meant to rectify this. So of course we need to rectify this by preaching Bhagavatam, we need to rectify it by being Bhagavatam. At least moving in that direction, you know, we might say, well, this is so depressing. At least to be moving in that direction, we're the Hare Krishna movement. So at least there should be some movement. Let me work at actually having Harikatha. To work in that direction. So that Krishna, we don't have to see Krishna in our life as Kalki. With the sword coming at us, and we can see Krishna with the flute calling us rather than the sword. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yeah.
I was thinking about when you were just speaking about how we keep the shell, but we don't keep the important thing inside. I was thinking there's this festival that we have upstate called Yoga Fest, and there's this guy that sings there. Sometimes he sings like bhajans and like the Hanuman Chalisa and stuff like that. His name is Naren, and he was telling this story about how, like, originally music, you know, everyone was facing the deities.
Yes.
And music was always for Krishna, always for God. But then when, like, these kings, these rulers conquered those areas, they wanted to keep the good things without God, so instead of everyone facing the deities, and
the musician
faces the people, and I was thinking, even music Yeah, we even, which seems like a very like basic thing, everyone enjoys music, but even that's like perverted. And yes. Ironically, he was on a stage facing an audience when he was telling that story, but yeah.
Yes, thank you.
I got one.
Yes.
A common misconception, just to help you flavor your class. A common misconception about Kalki is that he kills everyone. It's not true. If you go to Canto 12, Chapter 2, starting at text number 19, I think, my memory, which is a little overly photographic, served me correctly, as I mentioned to someone yesterday, that it actually goes through what Kalki does. And it says very explicitly, he kills the kings and the rulers who are imposing godlessness on society. They're the ones that have the structure, because as you mentioned, most people are simple.
Right.
Either because they're Brahmins or they're Sudras. And then you have a small number of them who are actually the builders. That's the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas. But you have mostly Sudras and then a few Brahmanas who are just not doing anything. They're useless. Those Brahmanas. But, and then it says the winds, this is all right there in Bhagavatam. So he kills them, and the winds coming from his body purify the ones that are left.
Mm.
And then it's really interesting. It says that he invigorates them to create progeny.
Ah.
So then those people create progeny, which is purified. And that's Satchayuga.
That starts the next Satchayuga.
And this is all there in Bhagavatam.
That's so cool.
You can reference all this. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
For some reason, these verses are always forgotten. And then you see Kalki kills everyone.
Mm.
It's like they look at the picture of Kalki killing and he figures, he kills everyone. It's a good picture. But if you read the verses, it says something a little different.
Right.
It's nice.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, as I said, I recently read this novel where this devotee was writing about the battle that happens at the end of Kali Yuga and with Kalki avatar. And I was thinking, because some of the things he wrote there weren't so accurate. And it was going to be really nice to have something that was really accurate about the battle at the end of the Kali Yuga.
You've got to figure there's some intrigue going on with him, too.
Oh, yeah.
There's less like Parshuram. There was some intrigue.
Yeah.
It's not that he just wakes up and starts killing everybody. No, there was something pushed
some precipitating factor, and yeah.
Pushed him over the edge, and then he's like, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
So if we stay out of politics, we can survive the age of Kali.
Well, Prabhupada said, don't take your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga. Specifically said that. He said, don't take your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga. Yeah.
Two things. First, I would appreciate you shared how to consider our mind as like a 2-year-old baby. You know, like you have to tell him sometimes, now it's time to chant, now it's time to read. And as you said, later in the class, and how Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, we should always think of Krishna. Like, that's the goal. But the reason starts with regulation. And then afterwards, it can become more so like to always think of Krishna. At least
yes.
Seven vision. Thank you for sharing that. And I had a question. You were sharing how in the beginning of the class, and this is also a famous verse, and how any good values without the central presence of Krishna, they ultimately lead to problems. You know, like the scientists, the philosophers, the politicians.
Yes.
So then I was wondering, you're writing this book about Varnas. So then. How do we talk to people about having God in the center when people are so much afraid of the word God itself? As I mentioned the word God, they're like turned off. Okay, this is a religious guy, you know.
Well, this is one of our struggles with the book. You know, we had one devotee, Gopal Vrindapal Prabhu, who's gone through our book, went through our first draft, and he was saying, how many times are you going to say the source, the supreme? You know, but it's hard because Bhakti Marg Swami was recently visited Hawaii when I was there. And he said he basically never uses the word God anymore.
He's the source.
He says he just uses divine. Mm. And in the novel I just published, after he said that, I was still working on it, and I thought, let me go through and see how many times I say God. Mm. And I kept the word God basically for the just Karmakandi religionists.
Mm.
And there's a few other places. But, it's language. It's just a question of just like I was saying here in this purport, Prabhupada talks about the intellectual class, the administrative class, and the productive class. So it's a question of putting things in a suitable language for people.
Mm-hmm.
If they have some sort of a knee-jerk reaction to particular terms, then use other terms. You know, just we have so many ways that we can destroy Krishna. I mean, Prabhupada's term, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a pretty odd term for Westerners. So using that term immediately, like, oh, what's that? It doesn't fit right into their neat little categories. And we also use, you know, absolute truth and super soul, soul of the universe. You know, in my book I use words like supreme friend, and, you know, there's all different ways that it can be explained. And then in our Varna book, we make the point several places that the Bhagavatam has four different descriptions of the Supreme. One is as the universal body, because that's a big thing nowadays.
Yes.
Be in touch with the universe.
Yeah.
And there's a book that Prabhupada wrote before coming to America on Ramananda Sambad, where Lord Chaitanya is talking to Ramananda Roy. And there Prabhupada explains that ordinarily Varnashram is you're working for the benefit of the universal form. You consider yourself a cell in the universal body, and you're working for the benefit of the whole body. So God is the universal form. The universe is God's body, which the second canto is, I think, three or four chapters in the second canto are about the universal body. Then God is Brahman, God is Paramatma, and God is Bhagavan. So there are those four understandings of God. And for society in general, people should do their varna with at least one of those understandings. So we can say, you know, we suggest you use the Bhagavan understanding. That's our suggestion. But at least one of those four. And should be able to get people at least work as part of the universe. You know, even if you're not a religious or spiritual person at all, you can still think, well, I'm part of the planet, I'm part of the universe, I should be working for the good of the universe. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why there's these descriptions of the universe as the body of God. Did you have something you wanted to say? No? Anybody else?
That's something for you. And you're obviously pushing Varnashram very nicely. Something I've been thinking of for a long time, the Indian system, unfortunately, has become corrupt. And Varnashram is used to decry and to hurt. But instead, the Varnashram system, each caste part should be glorified so that people who are in there will be attracted to, that's me. Otherwise, they have no goal and they have no focus. And if people don't have a focus, then they're lost, then they have no varna. And people who have no varna are disruptions to society.
Generally.
So the problem, even with an ISKCON, is that I am Brahmana. Oh yeah, well, I'm a Kshatriya. I am. You know? Like that. And the Sudras are just like, oh, the Sudra. And that's an ISKCON, isn't it? And it's not like that.
No, it's not like that. Yeah.
The Sudras are glorified too.
Absolutely. I mean, it's when ISKCON started, if you were a Brahmana or a Shudra, you had work to do in Mahaprabhu's movement. If you were a Vaishya or a Kshatriya, you were definitely in Maya. Unless you took care of cows. Unless you were a Vaishya or took care of cows. That was it. So the only Vaishya thing that was accepted was the cowherd. And then, you know, Shudras, you could fix the temple plumbing and pick it up and have cards. And, you know, the Brahmanas, you were the preachers.
But it's so pejorative, you know.
Oh, totally.
You go fix the plumbing.
Yes, it was very much like that. And then, you know, when book distribution went down and we went through all these political problems in the late 80s and the 90s, and all of a sudden we liked the Vaishyas because we needed them. All of a sudden we were telling people, oh, it's so good that you're rich. Keep being rich, please. Just give us some of it and don't be poor, you know. When I joined, it was like, give away all your possessions and move in the ashram. And now it's like, oh, you're rich? Keep your possessions and just share it with us. So we started respecting Vaishyas. We still haven't found any place for Kshatriyas. So we denigrate Sudras, and the devotees who suffer the most in our movement are Kshatriyas. We don't really have a place for them at all. You know, with a few exceptions. We have a few communities that are actually run by Kshatriyas who run things like a government, but generally not. And so what I see is most of our Kshatriya-inclined devotees have to work outside the movement in some way. You know, or they work in the movement and pretend to be a Brahmin or pretend to be a Vaishya, which just eats them up from inside. It just doesn't work very well. We have a whole chapter in our book about why not to cross fields. And Rupini and I were talking a lot about, you know, why these four? Why these four? There's hundreds of thousands of occupations. Why is Krishna putting them into four? And we go through with each of the possible combinations of crossing fields. You know, a Brahmana working as a Shudra working as a Vaishya, and what harm comes to the individual and what harm comes to society. But we make a great effort in our book to not to present any of the varnas as higher or lower at all. And, you know, in fact, in a lot of chapters, we start with the field of artistry as far as our descriptions of that. As I was saying, each of the varnas has something about it that is very conducive to bhakti. Okay, so if somebody is in the field of ideas, what's conducive about that, about working in the field of ideas as far as the development of bhakti?
Teachers.
Okay, you're naturally a teacher. You can teach about Krishna. What else?
They can teach about anything.
But what particularly helps them in bhakti if you're in the field of ideas? What makes bhakti easier if you're in the field of ideas?
You can always think of something to do for Krishna.
That's true in all the fields. What particularly in the field of ideas?
They're teachers. They can teach everyone about Krishna.
They can teach everyone about Krishna. What else?
They're teaching constantly about Krishna. That's what I'm saying.
There's more!
They can create more awareness for others.
A lot of the varna activities of the field of ideas are also angas of bhakti.
That's what I'm saying.
We say that about teaching. What about deity worship?
They're teaching about deity worship too.
They also do deity worship.
They're teaching everything is how related to Krishna. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
I said that like 10 times.
You did. Yes.
Good idea.
He's better than me. He should. Well, seriously, I'm not joking. I'm not being facetious.
Sure.
And what's the downside of the field of ideas as far as bhakti?
Concoction.
No! If you're good in the field of ideas, what's your downside?
A downside.
Yes.
Like armchair complacency kind of
thing. Well, again, the Brahmanas tend to be very self-satisfied.
Right.
Like making, but
you ever try to preach to people the mode of goodness?
Super hard.
No, really hard.
No reason to do it.
It's like, I'm already spiritual. I love, yeah, Krishna's great, Krishna consciousness is great. Yeah, it's wonderful, sure. I love your food. I'm already spiritual, you know. I'm already like totally satisfied. Why should I change anything? So that's the problem. Okay, what about field of government? What about the field of government makes bhakti easier than the other fields? What advantage do you have in the field of government that you don't have in the other fields for bhakti?
Good stuff.
Okay. We get a lot of stuff done in Mahaprabhu's movement, but specifically the nature of the field of government.
The attachment.
Okay, the attachment to Dharma. And if you become attached to Sanatan Dharma, then you already have such a firm attachment to Dharma that if you make that an attachment to Sanatan Dharma, bhakti becomes very easy. What intrinsically in the field of government makes bhakti difficult? That's just specifically for that field. It's not so much a difficulty for people in other fields.
Is it like Yudhishthira's situation where he couldn't lie for Krishna?
Their attachment to Dharma.
That's the other side of Dharma. Yeah. Could be. That you become attached to the Upadharmas instead of Sanatana Dharma. But I'm thinking very specifically for the field of government. There's also an attachment to what? Strong attachment to what?
Honor.
To name and fame. Yeah. Tends to be a strong attachment to name and fame. Alright, what about the field of resources? What's unique to the field of resources that is very suitable for bhakti? What are they taking care of?
Cows
and?
Devotees.
No, that's government. What are they taking care of?
Land.
The land. The earth. They're taking care of the earth. Who is the earth?
A devotee.
Which devotee?
Mother Bhumi.
Who is who?
Krishna's wife.
So they're directly serving the goddess of fortune, which others are not doing. I mean, that's the service in the field of resources.
They are serving the goddess of fortune. They are taking care of Krishna's wife. So what's the specific downfall of those in the field of resources as far as bhakti? The specific
claiming
to their
those resources for themselves.
Yes. Becoming greedy. So that's their specific downfall. Okay,
it's the same downfall for all four, by the way.
But they,
claiming the resources, so whatever it is you command for yourself.
For yourself. But each has a specific flavor. So like when you were talking about glorifying everyone, I find it's very useful to say how does your propensity uniquely qualify you for bhakti in ways it doesn't qualify other people? The Brahmins aren't really into taking care of the earth and the cows. It's not their thing. They might have a cow and a garden, but that's not what they're doing. And nor are the Kshatriyas doing. All right, what about the people in the field of artistry? They are creating beauty and function in the world. But what particularly
service.
The mood of service in the field of artistry is unique. It's absolutely unique. This mood of my craft, my art is for the pleasure of others. It's not for me to enjoy. I mean, just like I'm making this beautiful, beautiful thing. Whatever it is. This function and beauty, but it's, and I enjoy the fact that others are enjoying it. I paint the mural that's in the town hall. It's not on my wall. So that this is the mood of bhakti, that I get my pleasure from the pleasure of God. And it's very easy to change that from my pleasure is the pleasure of my customers and the pleasure of my master to the pleasure of God.
Almost seems like that's the best place to be then.
It is in many ways. It is in many ways, yes.
Because you're already apt to service.
Absolutely. It's one of the most wonderful varnas. Because you already have that mood. And the other thing about the field of artistry is some parts of the field of artistry very conducive to bhakti, like the music and dance and the fine arts. So the fine arts aspect of the field of artistry can be are direct angas of bhakti. Singing for the Lord, dancing for the Lord, painting pictures of the Lord.
We should all become sutras for the Lord. Sounds good.
Well, you know, we all have the name Das and Dasi, which are traditionally in the Indian caste system the name of the sutras. All right, what is the difficulty of the field of artistry as far as bhakti?
That self-satisfiedness can work against you.
The self-satisfaction that's not...
laziness.
That's laziness.
Right.
And that's... It's a... I don't want to do anything that's hard. So there's a real problem with doing any kind of tapasya. You know, as soon as something's hard, I don't want to do it anymore. A real trouble with determination in bhakti. So yeah, this real complacency is a problem. And that can lead to being dirty. You know, I don't want to bother to clean. Because it's too much work to clean. Just leave all the dirty laundry on the floor. And you know, that... I don't want to make nice food, just buy something, you know, get something out of a can. And so so you can look at each of the varnas, and each varna has something, you know, the main business of those in the field of ideas is truth. Well, whoa. You know, right there, you're dealing with truth, you're dealing with bhakti. And the problem is they already think they have it. It's hard to try for something you already think you have. The main thing of the people in the field of government is they want to fight for dharma. And if they fight for the right dharma, they're okay. The main problem with them is they tend to get involved in their own honor instead of the honor of God. For the Vaishyas, their main benefit is they're serving the goddess of fortune, which is the whole key to bhakti, is to serve the goddess of fortune. And then the main problem is greed. And the thing with those in the field of artistry is they already have the service mood. They just have to change who their master is. They're already there. And then in some parts of the field of artistry, the things are directly bhakti. And then the problem is just laziness. And an aversion to tapasya. So whatever varna you're in, what you do is you have to beware. Each of the downfalls are the influence of the modes, by the way. So if you can look at each of those downfalls, you can see one is the influence of sattva-guna, one's the influence of raja-guna, one's of tamaguna, one's of mixed tama and raja. So it's not exactly if you're in tamaguna be a sudra. It's if you're inclined to the field of artistry, you have to especially be careful of tamaguna. if you're inclined to the field of resources, you have to particularly be careful of how Rajagun and Tamagun mix. If you're inclined to the field of government, you have to particularly be careful of Rajagun. If you're inclined to the field of ideas, you have to be particularly careful of Sattvagun. Imagine that. You've got to be careful of Sattvagun. It can trip you up just as much as Tamagun. Actually, even more so, because it's a wolf that looks like a sheep. So it's more which combination of the modes do you have to be careful of in those fields. And then you say, this is my nature. What aspect of my nature makes bhakti easy? Fan that. Don't try to fan something that somebody else is easy. Does that make sense? What somebody else's jewel is, what somebody else's benefit is, don't try to fan that in yourself, because that's not what you have. Take what you have and fan that. And then people can be happy. Hey, I'm already in a service mood. I'm already in the mood of beauty and function and service. So this is just a little bit. I mean, our book's going to be long.
So when is coming out already?
Only Krishna knows. We have, the book's written. It's completely written. Right now, she and I are going through editing. So I finished all my editing. She's running behind me because she spent like an extra month working on the charity chapter. So, you know, we're editing each other's work. So I've gone through and edited all my work and all of her work, and she's probably about halfway through editing both of our work. Then I'll run through it again. Then she'll run through it again. Then we'll give it to outside editors, both devotees and non-devotees, and have them go through it. Then after they go through it, we go through it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's another year. But it's all written. I mean, everything's done as far as, you know, the basic, all the chapters, all the content. We need some charts and graphs and some illustrations. That hasn't been done. A little bit of that kind of thing. We're still working on some of our citations. Yeah?
I have a question. Stop
me. Yeah.
I'm in charge, so.
Oh, okay.
director's license is being
taken. Yes, okay.
When you mentioned about the tendency towards ritual and kind of doing
the empty rituals,
without having it in the heart. And so that's, I've noticed a challenge for our community and in general in community, is you get kind of familiar with each other and habituated to each other's presence. And then so in the times where you should be going deep and prayerful, either people just don't bother coming, or it's very obligatory without finding that connection. So have you, in your many years in the Krishna consciousness movement, have you noticed ways to inspire and instigate that kind of spontaneous present move in the ritual, which we isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon as far as I see?
Well, the ritual has to be there.
Yeah, like Sunday feast and RT.
Well, ritual has to be there. You know, first of all, most people are on the platform of Vaidhi Bhakti, and without the Vaidhi, there's no Vaidhi Bhakti. You have to have Vaidhi. But anyway, even people on the Raga platform engage in some sort of external demonstration of their devotion. I think it's really the point of the leaders to constantly make sure that, you know, you've got Krishna there. It's hard. I mean, you're making me think Devamadava of the New York Rath Yatra particularly. The New York Rath Yatra tends to be a big socializing event. Huh?
Yeah, I remember being very disappointed the first time.
It tends to be like that. You know, it's all our old New York people.
Yeah.
And we go there and, like, in the parade, while we're having the parade,
yeah,
it's like 90% of the devotees are, oh, how are you going? I haven't seen you for this, you know. It's mostly that. I noticed it when I went to the first time to the D.C. Rath Yatra, where we're part of the Independence Day parade.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to do that. You can only have 150 people walking with the carts, and we have to be in similar colors, and we have to be in lines. And your cheeks hurt by the end of the parade because you're smiling at other people.
Yeah,
actually your cheeks are aching at the end of the parade from all the smiling. But, you know, you're interacting with Jagannath and with the public, and you're not interacting with each other except to be there in the dancing. And So I saw that when there was a preaching mood, instant transformation. And we see that Srila Prabhupada mostly, almost entirely, focus our regular yajnas, I don't want to call them rituals, our regular yajnas on preaching. And if we don't focus our regular yajnas on preaching, they can tend to become social, cultural, gradually sectarian events. Not sectarian, secular. They can tend to become secular events, where the form is there, but the essence is not there anymore.
Sounds like that's a kshatriya thing to do, is to make it so that you have to do the preaching.
Well, that's what happened in D.C. Yeah.
Sounds like that's an advantage of a strong kshatriya society. For instance, the Manipuris.
Yes.
Sometimes the Manipuris have a very, very strong system that you had to be a Vaishnava if you wanted to stay in their country.
Yes. I was really struck when I went to Manipur. I've only been there one time, and there was this big performance done by devotees. I think it was all devotees in traditional Manipuri dance and music, and it was a dance drum. I was far out. I mean, it was all in Manipuri language, so I had somebody next to me translating. It was the political history of Manipur completely intertwined with Krishna consciousness, and it was just. Wow. But yeah, Prabhupada often says that without government actually spreading religion and keeping it pure is extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult. Just for Brahmanas to do it without Kshatriyas, you can only do it in a very limited
Brahmins
way.
Brahmins can't. They'll have a very small society, very small temple.
Yes.
You need a Kshatriya who's actually pushing it forward.
What Brahmanas can do is they can have little retreats.
Yeah.
Where you all get together and it's just devotees and the Brahman is basically...
Well, they'll have a small ashram.
Yes. And the Brahmanas can basically say, okay, we're having a japa retreat and no one's allowed to socialize for the next hour. Everybody has to chant japa. And you'll have, you know, maybe 50 people come. Maybe you can have a couple hundred people. But as far as our big yajnas, the big yajnas which involve people in general are the major, major festivals in society particularly. Yeah, without kshatriyas, they tend to degenerate into cultural, social events.
Well, or they could become very small ashrams.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You see, ISKCON has so many small ashrams run by Brahmanas.
Right. But as far as big sankirtan yajna for the people in general, it is a strong tendency, without government. And now with our secular government, the government actually pushes for all the major big festivals to be devoid of religion. Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the secular government. But I was saying, even in the UK, where they ostensibly, technically do not have a secular government, they're still secularizing everything. And the government is pushing. You all know what secularization means, right? Secularization means to do something without relation to God. Basically, you take God out of the story. So I was almost literally what it means. You don't explain your personal story or the collective story with reference to God. So yeah, without spiritualizing government, the chances of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world as a major movement are basically nil. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it. If you look at religious history, it's always when a government got involved. It was Emperor Ashoka with Buddhism, it was Constantine with Christianity. It always goes with government. So, unless the government... And you can also see, like, in this country, it's fairly easy to be a Christian. Because even though we have a secular government, it's more Christian-leaning. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Christmas is off. You know, Sundays are off. Try to get codices off. You know, it's a Christian-leaning country. And when you're in a country that leans towards a particular religion, it's far more easy to practice that religion. So if we could have a devotional government, then that would...
But a government's just a representation of the society. So you're not going to have a Hare Krishna government until society...
Well, that's why Prabhupada goes from both ends. Prabhupada's hitting it from both ends. So that's why mass book distribution, mass Harinam, mass prasadam distribution... to try to change people in general so that they'll want a Krishna conscious government And then preaching to leaders. Prabhupada preached a lot to leaders. You know, he wanted us to preach to college-educated people. That was a big thing for Srila Prabhupada. He wanted our books in the colleges. He wanted college preaching classes. He would preach, Prabhupada would preach to government officials. He would preach to the scholars and the intellectuals and the big business people. And so Prabhupada was going at it from both directions. I mean, this is an example of someone in the field of artistry, but I mean, what did George Harrison do for the movement? Unbelievable. I mean, actually, in modern society, we could also probably change government if we change people in the field of artistry. So if the musicians, the actors, the dancers, the artists, you know, if those people became Krishna conscious, and we do end up getting famous people in the field of artistry who become Krishna conscious. When they become Krishna conscious, they have a huge influence on people in general, the leaders in the field of artistry. Also, the field of artistry is responsible for propagating the ideas in the other three fields. The people in the field of ideas, government, and resources are dependent on the field of artistry for propagation of what they want to do. It's always been the case. It's propagated, you know, through the media. So that would be, if we get people in the field of artistry to become Krishna conscious, they will make propaganda to have people in the field of government. And the way we can do it with the people in the field of ideas is through writing. If people in the field of ideas write and popularize their writings, which of course we're having so many more devotees produce books all the time, then eventually people will look for, they'll be pushing for somebody in the field of government to actually be God conscious. But yeah, until and unless we get Kshatriyas who are pushing God consciousness, we'll never become God. We just can't. Everything pushes against it all the time. So it's, and Prabhupada makes this statement in a number of purports, that you have to have the support of government. So it's interesting that that's the one varna we really just haven't, what I call, activated in this time. We don't know where to put them, what to do with them.
And you're thinking on a big scale, not just within our community, but actually as a...
Well, that's kind of the problem with being Prabhupada's follower. We tend to think big because Prabhupada... Okay. Prabhupada has some purports where he says that we're going to spread Krishna consciousness to other planets. That definitely is not in my portfolio. I mean, I read those purports and I go, huh? But you know, he's got a number of purports where he says that this Krishna consciousness movement will not only spread all over the world but also to other planets and spread all over the universe.
That's really empowering. Thank you so much for that moment.
It's empowering? Are you ready to start your own spaceship?
Well, I'm just thinking more in terms of our role in society. And then he goes, what's your name, Prabhu?
Mayapachandra Das.
Mayapachandra was saying that it says, oh, I'm a sudra thing. Yeah. I think that comes because actually those people are not sudras.
Maybe. But I do agree with Mayapachandra Prabhu that, you know, we don't properly activate, empower everyone.
Right.
We activate and empower only certain kinds of people.
There's only plenty of narrow categories.
And there's very narrow categories of people that we activate and empower in our Hare Krishna movement. And people have to end up having to figure out for themselves, which can be a long, slow journey. You may not figure it out until you're in your 50s or something, and by that time you don't have any useful energy anymore. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. We should be empowering and activating people to change the world. That's the idea. And a lot of the way we're going to do it is through the varnas. People are going to go out into the world and they're going to act in their varnas in a way that spiritualizes the world. And Prabhupada's saying here in this purport, spread Bhagavatam throughout the world. He does not just mean going door to door selling Srimad Bhagavatams. He means living the Bhagavatam in the world. And, you know, at some point to other planets. My god sister Narayani once had a dream that she was opening another Krishna Balaram temple on another planet with Srila Prabhupada. But at least on this planet, and at least in Ypsilanti. You know, I was cajoled, forced, manipulated into giving a talk to the ISKCON European leaders a few years ago about women in ISKCON. I did not want to do it. And instead of being forthright as my usual MO, I just said, I don't have time. And so the person thought, oh, that means I should buy a ticket for you to arrive there at midnight the day before and leave at 6 in the morning the day after. So you can imagine what kind of state I was in when I was giving my presentation. But anyway, I started out asking the leaders. I said, if all of Europe were in Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement, or just we were in Spain, I said, or even just your country, or just Spain, what would people be doing? I was asking specifically about women. I said, what would women be doing? I said, what would they be doing in terms of career, which is Varna? What would they be doing in terms of lifestyle, which is ashram? What would they be doing in terms of bhakti? And guess how many people, these were all the leaders of ISKCON Europe, guess how many people had a vision? Yes, that's right. If I told you what they actually said, you'd be so embarrassed, you probably wouldn't want to be part of the society anymore. I mean, it was so embarrassing what they said, what their visions were for what would women be doing in a Krishna-conscious society. It was like, thank you, Krishna, we are not running the world.
Cleaning bathrooms.
No, should I say?
Yeah, I'm curious.
They said all women would be wives and mothers, but some would be princesses, and some would be prostitutes.
Oh, that's nasty.
That was it. Those were the career options.
I'll be your prostitute.
You'll be a prostitute. And I was like, you know, and I was listening to this thinking, thank God we're not running the governments of Europe. It was absurd. So. But what it also told me was that nobody ever thought about that question.
So I think it's the same thing, right? Taliban is running like
they're running it like that.
Religious government, and then if they don't do it properly, then
it's a catastrophe.
What comes out? So if
I'm not sure they're running a religious government.
Well, but the other interesting.
No, but that's what they're doing. Yeah. Like, based on their scripture, they have.
They're trying.
Yeah, Sharia and all those things, that's what they do.
And they just make a catastrophe of it. Well, the other interesting thing I brought up to the leaders, as I said, if your main vision for women is as wives and mothers, then what are you doing now in ISKCON to help women be wives and mothers? What are you helping people to, how are you helping women to find a nice husband? How are you helping women to prepare for marriage? How are you supporting them within marriage? Are you making schools for children?
I guess Jyoti was an outcast because she did a lot more than just be a wife and a mother.
Well, she was in the princess category.
Oh, she was a princess?
She was a princess.
Well, that means all the other things she did were just complete nonsense.
I know, isn't it?
You didn't realize she was a treasurer.
She was the secretary of the treasurer for the whole empire, you know.
And that was the whole world.
It was the whole world.
She's a real princess.
She was also running the royal household, which consisted of 100,000 people. So she was running basically a city.
It's total nonsense.
I know, huh?
Outside
she just
of
doesn't fit into the Sankirtan movement at all. I don't know what we're going to do with her. But anyway, in that meeting, I could understand that. I said, first of all, this vision was a little peculiar, and second of all, you're not even preparing for that vision. You're not even dealing with the women to prepare them for this vision. There was a disconnect between what we're doing day to day and what their vision was.
So Kshatriya.
I would suggest, yes, this is the vision of a Kshatriya. So what we need to do, if we want to make Ypsilanti, let's keep it small for now. If we want to make Ypsilanti Krishna conscious, we have to have a vision of what would that look like. What would Ypsilanti look like if it were in Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement? What would people be doing? I mean, I've heard ISKCON leaders say, you know, devotees shouldn't be running hospitals. What do you want the devotee doctors to do? What do you want them to do? Don't you want the hospitals run by devotees where they're playing Prabhupada's lectures and serving prasadam? Wouldn't you like it if Monsanto was run by devotees? I mean, come on. Wouldn't you like it if Walmart was being run by devotees and Amazon was run by devotees and America? Wouldn't we like a devotee in the White House? I would like a devotee. Not probably anybody else in the White House, but you know, a devotee would be awfully nice. I mean, wouldn't we like things being run by devotees? Isn't that our idea? So if you just, you know, took this area here, the houses, what would the houses be like? What would the shops be like? Some of the shops would close. That Three Ugly Girls one would close. You know, so some of the places would close. But most of them would be
changed. No, it depends on his vision.
Oh, because we have to have the prostitutes, right?
That's right. I'll be one of those. Forgot my job choice.
But I mean, we have to have a vision.
Yeah, that's good.
You have to have a vision. Like you know, there's a saying, if you don't know where you're going, you probably won't get there. So we don't know where we're going. John! So, you know, we want to have a vision, and then we can make decisions on a day-to-day basis.
I'd like to add something, actually, to this.
Yeah.
We were just in Richmond. I was assisting a great Swami in Richmond. Richmond?
Virginia.
Okay. I keep getting mixed up with the other one, Har place.
Redmond.
Yeah. Oh, Redmond,
Richmond. So in Richmond. And they've grown enough that now they're confused and they don't know what to do with it.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And so, and this is a theme that I've seen pretty much every place that I've been in my life, that they grow to a certain extent and then they don't know what to do with it. They get confused. They hit their limit and then it goes down. And it's the same thing over and over and over again. So all you need is ipsilanti to not do that. And then you can take over the world. You just
need one model.
You just need one model to do it properly. And then they can take over the city. They can take over the state. They can take over the country. It starts from one place doing it properly. And what is that model? That everybody is favorably encouraged to go to the varna that they're expert at.
And do their varna for the pleasure of the Lord. Even if it's just the pleasure of the universal body. At least that everybody should be doing their varna for at least the pleasure of the universal body, according to the principles of varna, dharma, which includes things like religious performance and charity, and how you cooperate with those in the other varnas, and how you compete with those in your varnas.
This Richmond community is probably the same size as this, and they've hit their peak because they don't know how to now cooperate amongst themselves to... forward.
And how to spread out in the society. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first joined, my mother was very antagonistic for 8 years and mildly antagonistic for 2 more years. But I remember in the beginning she said something to me which I thought was just outrageously offensive, but it was actually quite intelligent. She said, so you're going out and selling your books to people and trying to convince them to move into your temple, and how big of a temple are you going to have? You know, could everybody in New York City live in your temple? And then who would you sell the books to and how would you keep it going? You know, and I just thought, what an offensive person. But it was actually very intelligent that we weren't looking at a long, like at Gita Nagari. I remember when we first moved to Gita Nagari, and the temple president was modeling taking care of the cows after the cow slaughtering places. So, you know, he was breeding the cows every year. He was milking them with machines. He was breeding them every year. And I remember my husband asking him, what's your sustainable policy? He said, in 20 years, you're not going to be able to maintain the animals here. And he said, oh, we'll worry about that in 20 years. So, and then, of course, the whole thing folded in on itself. Yeah, it didn't last for 20 years.
No way.
Yeah. This sort of visioning exercise where we look at, you know, what's the vision for this little community? What's the vision, and what's ultimately our vision for Ypsilanti? And then you go move from that. What's our vision for, you know, southeastern Michigan? And then you can move from that. What's our vision for the lower peninsula? And then move from that. What's our vision for all of Michigan? You know, what are you going to do with the guys up in the upper peninsula?
I think we should have a Varnashram leader for ISKCON. And he goes around, or she goes around.
Well, we do sort of have a Varnashram leaders for ISKCON, but one of them who Rukmini and I encountered it when we were just starting our book, we asked this person said in the Bhagavatam class that you know, there's principles of Varnashram, and Rukmini and I were very excited and we were poking each other, and, wow, this is what we want for our book, the principles of Varnashram. And so we asked this very wonderful Vaishnava, so what are the principles of Varnashram? And it took him 10 minutes to give even one principle. And then the only principle that he could give was that all women should be good wives and we should take care of cows. And that was it. Those were the only two principles he gave for Varnashram. So he gave one Varna principle and one Ashram principle each one applying to just a little teeny tiny piece. So he gave us one piece of the Varna principle for those in the fields of resources, and one piece of the principle for half of the parties in the Grahasash.
That's great. That means you have a lot of work for yourself.
So, yeah. So we're hoping you can bless us, that Rukmini and I can finish this book. We're presenting it in ordinary language. We're not using very much Sanskrit. We are using Sanskrit for a few things. But we're presenting it for the general public consumption. And she's got a PhD in mathematics, and I have a PhD in education. So we're hoping that we can use our academic credentials and start presenting this, especially in universities.
John.
And especially to leaders.
Maybe the leaders of ISKCON too.
That would be very nice. That would be very nice. I found that presenting things to the leaders of ISKCON is an interesting challenge. But they don't usually show up. But we're hoping that we can... It's fat. But we're hoping that we can, get this out as something that people can understand, because everybody needs money, everybody has to work, and one has to have some sort of a career, or almost everybody.
You know what I think you should do? You should move to Ypsilanti and help make the most successful place in all the United States.
I don't need to do that, because the people who live here are already exceptionally qualified.
That's fine. They all need their Varnashram plug-in now. And that's it.
Well, you Varnashram now.
iPhone app.
Yeah, you should make an app. Fill out these questionnaires and find out what your Varna is.
Well, Rukmini's based in Columbus. That's not so far.
That's
right. So, and she'll be here for the wedding. Those of you who haven't met her, you can get to meet her. She's absolutely brilliant. Literally. Very literally, absolutely brilliant. Much, much, much more brilliant than I am. I often have to say to her, remember when you're talking to me, you're talking to a stupid person. So
I think that whenever I talk to you.
Yeah, I know. You're great, my pleasure. He's my son-in-law, by the way, if you didn't know.
Nice relationship.
Yeah, it is. He's very nice. It's very sweet. Okay, sweetie, very blessed.
Just trying to follow your orders, mother.
But anyway, I think, if any of you would like to help us in this endeavor, if any of you are willing to, read through our manuscript and aren't quite ready for that yet, and give us comments and directions, or if you know of people, especially non-devotees, we'd like to have.
I'm very serious that you should pick a community and help them establish a Varnashram. I'm not just being joking.
Well, if that's what he wants.
You got the boss of this community right there. There's no model anywhere in the world of an actually Varnashram society that's part of society. There's closed systems that are kind of doing it.
Yeah, well, maybe. I think Rukmini would be better for that. She's not as itinerant as I am. She's a more rooted person. I'm very rootless. Not ruthless. Rootless.
I heard the other one.
Yeah. But she's a very rooted person. So she might be better to do that kind of thing.
There is something nice about being in a small town trying to share Krishna consciousness. When we were in New York helping with that there, it was a completely different process of sharing Krishna consciousness with people. And when we came here, nothing was what we anticipated or expected, because we hadn't really worked as a piece of a larger community that was already established that wasn't Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a really nice challenge, but there's a lot of benefits to being in a very small community of people who are looking to improve their community also.
It forces a level of integrity to the teachings that you don't have to have when you're doing a machine gun approach.
Right.
And it's wham bam, thank you ma'am, on to the next town 3 days later. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be here for three decades or longer,
right,
then you have to take things in a much more honest way than we have in the past. So painting the house is as good preaching as 100 books going out. Right.
Well, see if you can get with me. She's looking for a professorship in mathematics. See if you can get her any connection with the university here.
Yeah.
And,
or you.
Well, that's not my thing anymore. But see if we could do that.
Yeah.
But I was thinking also, there's There are devotees who are starting to infiltrate local government. I think Gopal has gotten some positions, Little Gopal in North Carolina. And in Hungary is one of the more interesting places, that in the village next to the farm in Hungary, one of our devotees, Radha Krishna Prabhu, who's now becoming a GVC, he became very active in the local political situation. He's definitely accepted. And there's been some movement of the devotees to get involved in that village on the political and governmental level. And also our farm community there, we get scholars that come there all the time to study our eco-village. So there, I think that's one place in the world where it might start to happen. And the leader there, Shiva Ramaswamy, is very much meditating on how to do Varna and Ashram in society in general. So I see there's a great potential there that could be the first model. It's already kind of moving in that direction. But that culture is quite different from American culture. All right, we've gone really late. This is worse. Yet today I was determined to end early. End early.
Shrila Prabhupada ki jai.